Chapter 2. The Conqueror Worm. And much of madness, and more of sin, and horror the soul of the plot. Edgar Allan Poe. The Conqueror Worm. As the Institute's carriage rolled through the gates of Lightwood House in Chiswick, Tessa was able to appreciate the place as she had not the first time she had been there in the dead of night. A long gravel road, flanked by trees, led up to an immense white house with a circular drive in front of it. The house bore a strong resemblance to sketches she had seen of the classical temples of Greece and Rome with its strong, symmetrical lines and clean columns. There was a carriage drawn up before the steps, and gravel paths spread out through a network of gardens. And lovely gardens they were. Even in October they were a riot of blooms. Late-flowering red roses and chrysanthemums in bronze-orange, yellow and dark-gold-bordered neat paths that wandered through the trees. As Henry drew their carriage to a stop, Tessa stepped out of the carriage, helped by Jem, and heard the sound of water, a stream, she suspected, diverted to run through the gardens. It was such a lovely place. She could hardly associate it in her mind with the same location where Benedict had held his devilish ball, though she could see the path that wound around the side of the house that she had taken that night. It led to a wing of the house that looked as if it had been recently added. The Lightwood carriage rolled up behind them, driven by Gideon. Gabriel, Will, and Cecily spilled out. The Herondale siblings were still arguing with each other as Gideon climbed down, Will illustrating his points with bold sweeps of his arms. Cecily was scowling at him, the furious expression of her face making her look so much like her brother that it would, under other circumstances, have been amusing. Gideon, even paler than before, turned in a circle, his blade unsheathed in his hand. "Tatiana's carriage," he said shortly, as Jem and Tessa reached him. He pointed toward the vehicle drawn up by the steps. Its doors were both open. "She must have decided to pay a call."
"Of all the times!" Gabriel sounded furious, but his green eyes were sick with fear.
Tatiana was their sister, recently married. The coat of arms on the carriage, a wreath of thorns, must have been a symbol of her husband's family, Tessa thought. The group stood frozen, watching as Gabriel moved to the carriage, slipping a long saber from his belt. He leaned in the door and cursed aloud. He pulled back, his eyes meeting Gideon's.
"There's blood on the seats," he said, "and this stuff."
He prodded at a wheel with the tip of the saber, and when he drew it away, a long thread of stinking slime trailed from it. Will whipped a serif blade from his coat and called aloud,
"Aremio!"
As it began to blaze, a pale white star in the autumn light, he pointed first north and then south. "The gardens run around the house down to the river," he said.
"I ought to know.
I chased the demon Marbus all up through here one night. Wherever Benedict is, I doubt he'll leave these grounds. Too much a chance of being seen."
"We'll take the west side of the house. You take the east," said Gabriel. "Shout if you see anything and we'll converge."
Gabriel cleaned his blade on the gravel of the drive, stood and followed his brother around the side of the house. Will headed the other way, followed by Jem with Cecily and Tessa just behind them. Will paused at the corner of the house, scanning the gardens with his gaze, alert for any unusual sight or sound. A moment later, he beckoned for the others to follow. As they moved forward, the heel of Tessa's shoe caught on one of the loose bits of gravel beneath the hedges. She stumbled and immediately righted herself, but Will glanced back and scowled.
"Tessa," he said.
There had been a time when he had called her Tess, but no longer.
"You shouldn't be with us. You're not prepared. At least wait in the carriage."
"I shan't," said Tessa mutinously. Will turned back to Jem, who appeared to be hiding a smile.
"Tess is your fiancé. You make her see sense."
Jem, holding his sword cane in one hand, moved across the gravel to her.
"Tessa, do it as a favor to me, could you?"
"You don't think I can fight," Tessa said, drawing back and matching his silvery gaze with her own. "Because I'm a girl."
"I don't think you can fight because you're wearing a wedding dress," said Jem. For what it's worth, I don't think Will could fight in that dress either.
Perhaps not, said Will, who had ears like a bat. But I would make a radiant bride.
Cecily raised her hand to point into the distance.
What's that?
All four of them whirled to see a figure racing toward them. The sunlight was directly ahead, and for a moment, as Tessa's eyes adjusted, all she saw was a blur. The blur quickly resolved itself into the figure of a running girl. Her hat was gone. Her light brown hair flew on the wind. She was tall and bony, dressed in a bright fuchsia dress that had probably once been elegant, but was now torn and bloodstained. She continued shrieking as she barreled toward them and threw herself into Will's arms. He staggered backward, nearly dropping the Eremial.
Tatiana!
Tessa couldn't quite tell if Will pushed her away or she drew back on her own, but either way, Tatiana moved an inch or so away from Will, and Tessa could see her face for the first time. She was a narrow, angular girl. Her hair was sandy like Gideon's, her eyes green like Gabriel's, and she might have been pretty had her face not borne the lines of pinched disapproval. Even though she was tear-stained and gasping, there was something theatrical about it, as if she were aware of all the eyes on her, especially Will's.
A great monster, she wept. A creature. It seized darling Rupert from the carriage and made off with him.
Will pushed her a bit further away.
What do you mean, made off with him?
She pointed.
There,
she sobbed.
It dragged him to the Italian gardens. He managed to elude its maw at first, but it harried him through the paths. No matter how much I screamed, it would not put him down.
She burst into a fresh wave of tears.
You screamed, Will said. Is that all you did?
I screamed a great deal.
Tatiana sounded injured. She drew fully away from Will and fixed him with a green gaze.
I see you are as ungenerous as you ever were.
Her eyes skated to Tessa, Cecily, and Jem.
Mr. Callstairs, she said stiffly,
as if they were at a garden party. Her eyes narrowed as they fell on Cecily.
And you?
Oh, in the name of the angel.
Will pushed past her. Jem, with a smile at Tessa, followed.
You cannot be other than Will's sister,
said Tatiana to Cecily, as the boys vanished into the distance. Tessa, she pointedly ignored. Cecily looked at her incredulously.
I am, though I cannot imagine what difference it makes.
Tessa, are you coming?
I am, Tessa said, and joined her. Whether Will wanted her there or not, or Jem either, she could not watch the two of them walk into danger and not want to be where they were. After a moment, she heard Tatiana's reluctant footsteps on the gravel behind her. They were moving away from the house, toward the formal gardens half hidden behind their high hedges. In the distance, sunlight sparked off a wood and glass greenhouse with a cupola on the roof. It was a fine autumn day. There was a brisk wind, the smell of leaves in the air. Tessa heard a rustle and glanced at the house behind her. Its smooth white facade rose high, broken only by the arches of balconies.
Will? She whispered,
as he reached up and unlocked her hands from around his neck. He drew her gloves off, and they joined her mask and Jesse's pins on the stone floor of the balcony. He pulled off his own mask next, and cast it aside, running his hands through his damp black hair, pushing it back from his forehead. The lower edge of the mask had left marks across his high cheekbones, like light scars. But when she reached to touch them, he gently caught at her hands and pressed them down.
No, he said. Let me touch you first. I have wanted.
Blushing furiously, Tessa pulled her gaze away from the house and the memories it contained. The group had reached a gap in the hedges on their right. Through it, what was clearly the Italian garden was visible, ringed round by foliage. Within the circle, the garden was lined with rows of statuary depicting classical heroes and figures of myth. Venus poured water from an urn in a central fountain, while statues of great historians and statesmen, Caesar, Herodotus, Thucydides, regarded each other with blank eyes across the walkways that radiated from the central point. There were also poets and playwrights, Tessa hurrying along past Aristotle, Ovid, Homer. His eyes bound with a stone mask to indicate his blindness. Virgil and Sophocles, before an ear-splitting scream rent the air. She whirled around. Several feet behind her, Tatiana was standing stock still, her eyes bulging out of her head. Tessa dashed back toward her, the others on her heels. She reached the girl first, and Tatiana caught at her blindly, as if forgetting for the moment who Tessa was.
Rupert,
Tatiana moaned, staring ahead of her. And Tessa, following her gaze, saw a man's boot protruding from behind a hedge. She thought for a moment that he must have been lying stunned upon the ground, the rest of his body hidden by foliage. But as she leaned forward, she realized that the boot, and the several inches of gnawed upon bloody flesh that protruded from the boot's opening, were all there was to see.
A 40-foot worm,
Will muttered to Jem as they moved through the Italian garden, their boots, thanks to a pair of soundless runes, making no noise in the gravel.
Think of the size of the fish we could catch.
Jem's lips twitched.
It's not funny, you know. It is a bit. You cannot reduce the situation to worm jokes, Will. This is Gabriel and Gideon's father we're discussing. We're not just discussing him. We're chasing him through an ornamental sculpture garden because he's turned into a worm.
A demonic worm, said Jem, pausing to peer cautiously around a hedgerow. A great serpent. Would that help your inappropriate humour?
There was a time when my inappropriate humour brought you a certain amusement, sighed Will.
How the worm has turned.
Will. Jem was interrupted by an ear-splitting scream. Both boys spun, in time to see Tatiana Blackthorne reel backward into Tessa's arms. Tessa caught the other girl, supporting her, as Cecily moved toward a gap in the hedges, whipping a seraph blade from her belt with the ease of a practiced shadow hunter. Will did not hear her speak, but the blade sprang up in her hand, lighting her face and setting a sick blaze of dread alight in Will's stomach. He began to run, Jem at his heels. Tatiana was sagging limply in Tessa's arms, her face starkly twisted into a wail.
Rupert! Rupert!
Tessa was struggling with the other girl's weight, and Will wanted to pause to help her, but Jem already had. His hand on Tessa's arm, and it was reasonable. It was his place, as her fiancé. Will savagely yanked his attention away, back to his sister, who was moving between the gap in the hedges, her blade held high as she edged around the grisly remains of Rupert Blackthorne.
Cecily!
Will called in exasperation. She began to turn. And the world exploded. A fountain of dirt and mud sprayed up before them, geysering into the sky. Clods of earth and mud clattered down on them like hail. In the center of the geyser, an enormous blind serpent, a pale grayish-white color, the color of dead flesh, Will thought. A stench came off it like the stench of a grave. Tatiana gave a wail and went limp, pulling Tessa to the ground with her. The worm began to fling itself to and fro, trying to pull free of the earth. Its mouth opened. It was less of a mouth than more of an enormous slash bisecting its head, lined with shark-like teeth. A great keening hiss came from its throat.
Halt!
Cecily cried. She held her blazing seraph blade out in front of her. She looked absolutely fearless.
Get back, damn creature!
The worm lashed down toward her. She stood fast, her blade in hand, as its great jaws descended, and Will leaped at her, knocking her out of the way. They both rolled into a hedge as the worm's head struck the ground where she had been standing, leaving a sizable dent.
Will!
Cecily pulled herself away from him, but not quite in time. Her seraph blade slashed across his forearm, leaving a red burn behind. Her eyes were blue fire.
That was unnecessary! You're not trained,
Will shouted, half out of his mind with fury and terror.
You'll get yourself killed. Stay where you are.
He reached for her blade, but she twisted away from him and onto her feet. A moment later, the worm was surging down again, its mouth open. Will had dropped his own blade, diving for his sister. It was several feet away. He leaped to the side, avoiding the creature's jaws by inches, and then Jem was there, sword cane in hand. He drove the blade up hard into the side of the worm's body. A hellish scream burst from its throat, and it whipped backward, spraying black blood. With a hiss, it disappeared behind a hedgerow. Will spun around. He could barely see Cecily. Jem had thrown himself between her and Benedict, and he was spattered in black blood and mud. Behind Jem, Tessa had dragged Tatiana into her lap. Their skirts belled out together, Tatiana's gaudy pink mixing with the ruined gold of Tessa's wedding dress. Tessa had bent over her as if to protect her from the sight of her father, and much of the demon blood had splashed upon Tessa's hair and clothes. She looked up, her face pale, and her eyes met Will's. For a moment, the garden, the noise, the stench of blood and demon vanished away, and he was alone in a soundless place with only Tessa. He wanted to run to her, wrap her in his arms, protect her. But it was Jem's place to do those things. Not his. Not his. The moment passed and Tessa was on her feet, pulling Tatiana up by main force, looping the other girl's arm about her own shoulders even as Tatiana lolled against her, half-conscious.
"You must move her from here. She'll be killed," Will said, sweeping his gaze over the garden. "She has no training."
Tessa's mouth began to set in its familiar stubborn line. "I don't wish to leave you." Cecily looked horrified.
"You don't think. Wouldn't the creature hold off? She's his daughter. If he has any family feeling left." "He consumed his son-in-law, Ceci," Will snapped.
"Tessa, go with Tatiana if you want to save her life. And stay with her by the house. It would be a disaster if she came rushing back here."
"Thank you, Will," Jem murmured as Tessa drew the stumbling girl away as quickly as she could. And Will felt the words as three needle pricks inside his heart. Always when Will did something to protect Tessa, Jem thought it was for his sake, not for Will's. Always Will wished Jem could be entirely right. Each needle prick had its own name. Guilt. Shame. Love.
Cecily screamed. A shadow blotted out the sun, and the hedgerow in front of Will burst apart. He found himself staring down the dark red gullet of a massive worm. Ropes of spittle hung between its enormous teeth. Will snatched for the sword at its belt, but the worm was already rearing back, a dagger protruding from the side of its neck. Will recognized it without turning. It was Jem's. He heard his parabatai cry out a warning, and then the worm was hurtling toward Will again, and he slammed his sword upward through the underside of its jaw. Blood spurted through its teeth, spattering Will's gear with a hissing noise. Something struck the back of his knees, and, unprepared, he went over hard, his shoulders slamming into the turf. He choked as the wind was knocked out of him. The worm's thin, annulated tail was wrapped around his knees. He kicked out, seeing stars, Jem's anxious face, blue sky above him. Thunk! An arrow embedded itself in the worm's tail, just below Will's knee. Benedict's grip loosened and Will rolled away across the dirt and struggled to his knees, just in time to see Gideon and Gabriel Lightwood pounding toward them across the dirt path. Gabriel held a bow. He was notching it again as he ran, and Will realized with a distant surprise that Gabriel Lightwood had just shot his father to save Will's life. The worm caromed backward, and there were hands under Will's arms, hauling him to his feet. Jem. He released Will, who turned to see that his parabatai already had his sword cane out and was glaring ahead. The demon worm appeared to be writhing in agony, undulating as it swept its great blind head from side to side, uprooting shrubbery with its thrashings. Leaves filled the air, and the small group of shadow hunters choked on dust. Will could hear Cecily coughing, and longed to tell her to run back to the house, but he knew she wouldn't do it. Somehow the worm, by thrashing its jaws, had worked the sword free. The weapon clattered to the ground among the rose bushes, smeared with black ichor. The worm began to slide backward, leaving a trail of slime and blood. Gideon grimaced and dashed forward to seize up the fallen sword with a gloved hand. Suddenly, Benedict reared up like a cobra, his jaws apart and dripping. Gideon raised the sword, looking impossibly small against the creature's vast bulk.
Gideon! Was Gabriel, white-faced, raising his bow.
Will spun aside as an arrow flew past him and buried itself in the worm's body. The worm yelped and spun, humping its body away from them with incredible speed. As it slithered away, a flick of its tail caught the edge of a statue and squeezed it tightly. The statue exploded into dust, showering into the dry, ornamental pool.
By the angel, it just crushed Sophocles, noted Will, as the worm vanished behind a large structure shaped like a Greek temple. Has no one respect for the classics these days?
Gabriel, breathing hard, lowered his bow.
You fool, he said savagely to his brother.
What were you thinking, rushing up to him like that?
Gideon whirled round, pointing his bloody sword at Gabriel. Not him, it. That is not our father any longer, Gabriel. If you cannot countenance that fact...
I shot him with an arrow, Gabriel shouted. What more do you want of me, Gideon?
Gideon shook his head as if disgusted with his brother. Even Will, who did not like Gabriel, felt a twinge of sympathy for him. He had shot the beast.
We must pursue it, said Gideon. It has gone behind the folly.
The what? Said Will.
The folly, Will, said Jem. It's a decorative structure. I assume there is no real interior.
Gideon shook his head.
It's merely plaster. If we two were to go around one side of it, and you and James the other.
Cecily, what are you doing? Will demanded,
interrupting Gideon. He knew he sounded like a distracted parent, but he didn't care. Cecily had slid her blade into her belt, and it appeared to be trying to climb one of the small yew trees inside the first row of hedges.
Now is not the time for climbing trees!
She looked toward him angrily, her black hair blowing across her face. She opened her mouth to answer, but before she could speak, there was a sound like an earthquake, and the folly burst apart in shards of plaster. The worm hurtled forth, heading straight toward them with the terrifying speed of an out-of-control train. By the time they reached the front courtyard of Lightwood House, Tessa's neck and back were aching. She was tightly laced into her corset beneath the heavy wedding dress, and the weight of the sobbing Tatiana dragged down her left shoulder painfully. She was relieved to see the carriages come into view. Relieved, and also startled. The scene in the courtyard was so peaceful. The carriages, where they had left them, the horses cropping grass, the facade of the house undisturbed. After half-carrying, half-dragging Tatiana to the first carriage, Tessa wrenched the door open and helped her in, wincing when the other girl's sharp nails dug into her shoulders as she heaved herself and her skirts into the space inside.
Oh, God, Tatiana moaned. The shame of it, the terrible shame, that the Clave might know of what has befallen my father. For pity's sake, could he not have thought of me, even for a moment?
Tessa blinked. That thing, she said. I do not think it was capable of thinking of anyone, Mrs. Blackthorne.
Tatiana looked at her dizzily, and for a moment Tessa was ashamed of the resentment she had felt toward the other girl. She had not liked being sent away from the gardens, where she might perhaps have helped, but Tatiana had just seen her husband torn to pieces before her eyes by her own father. She was deserving of more sympathy than Tessa had been feeling. Tessa made her voice more gentle. I know you have had a bad shock. If you would lie down.
You're very tall, Tatiana said. Do gentlemen complain of it?
Tessa stared.
And you're dressed as a bride, said Tatiana. Is that not very odd? Would not gear suit the task better?
I understand it is unflattering and needs must as the devil drives, but... There was a sudden loud crash. Tessa detached herself from the carriage and glanced about. The sound had come from inside the house.
Henry, Tessa thought.
Henry had gone into the house alone.
Of course, the creature was out in the gardens, but nevertheless it was Benedict's house.
She thought of the ballroom, full of demons, the last time Tessa had been there, and she gathered up her skirts in both hands.
Remain here, Mrs. Blackthorne, she said. I must discover the cause of that noise.
No,
Tatiana sat bolt upright.
Do not leave me.
I am sorry. Tessa backed away, shaking her head. I must. Please stay inside the carriage.
Tatiana cried something after her, but Tessa had already turned to dash up the steps. She pushed her way through the front doors and emerged in a grand entryway, floored with alternating squares of black and white marble, like a checkerboard. A massive chandelier hung from the ceiling, though none of its tapers were lit. The only light in the place came from the daylight flooding in through the high windows. A curving staircase of great grandeur wound its way upward.
"Henry!" Tessa cried. "Henry, where are you?"
An answering cry and another crash came from the floor above. Tessa dashed up the stairs, stumbling as her foot caught on the hem of her dress and ripped a seam wide open. She switched the skirt out of the way impatiently and continued running, down a long corridor whose walls were painted powder blue and were hung with dozens of gilt-framed etchings, through a pair of doors, and into another room. It was most assuredly a man's room, a library or an office. The curtains a heavy dark fabric, oil paintings of great ships of war hung on the walls. Rich green wallpaper covered the walls, though it appeared to be mottled with odd dark stains. There was a strange smell to the place, a smell like the one down by the banks of the Thames, where odd things rotted in the weak daylight, and laid over that the coppery tang of blood. A bookcase had tipped over, a welter of smashed glass and broken wood, and on the Persian rug beside it was Henry, locked in a wrestling match with a thing with grey skin and an unnerving number of arms. Henry was yelling and kicking out with his long legs, and the thing, a demon no doubt, was tearing at his gear with claws, its wolf-like snout snapping at his face. Tessa looked around wildly, seized up the poker that lay by the dormant fireplace and charged. She tried to keep her training in mind, all those hours of Gideon's careful talk of calibration and speed and grip, but in the end it seemed pure instinct to drive the long steel rod into the creature's torso, where there would have been a ribcage if it had been a real earthly animal. She heard something crunch as the weapon went in. The demon gave a howl like a baying dog and rolled off Henry, and the poker clattered to the floor. Black ichor sprayed, filling the room with the stench of smoke and rot. Tessa stumbled back, her heel catching on the torn edge of her gown. She fell to the ground just as Henry heaved himself over and, with a muttered curse, slashed the demon across the throat with a dagger-like blade that glowed with runes. The demon gave a gurgling cry and folded up like paper. Henry lurched to his feet, his gingery hair matted with blood and ichor. His gear was torn at the shoulder, scarlet fluid leaking from the wound. "Tessa!" he exclaimed, and then he was beside her, helping her to her feet. "By the angel, we're a pair," he said in his rueful Henry way, looking at her worriedly. "You're not hurt, are you?" She glanced down at herself and saw what he meant. Her dress was soaked with a spray of ichor, and there was an ugly cut on her forearm where she had fallen on the broken glass. It didn't hurt much yet, but there was blood. "I am quite all right," she said. "What happened, Henry? What was that thing, and why was it in here?"
"A guardian demon. I was searching Benedict's desk, and I must have moved or touched something that awoke it. Black smoke poured from the drawer, and it became that. It lunged at me."
"And clawed you," Tessa said in concern. "You're bleeding."
"No, I did that myself, fell on my dagger," Henry said sheepishly, drawing a steely from his belt. "Don't tell Charlotte."
Tessa almost smiled. Then, remembering, she dashed across the room and tugged open the curtains across one of the tall windows. She could see out across the gardens, but not, frustratingly, the Italian garden. They were on the wrong side of the house for that. Green box hedges and flat grass, beginning to brown with winter, stretched out before her. "I must go," she said. "Will and Jem and Cecily, they were battling the creature. It has killed Tatiana Blackthorne's husband. I had to convey her back to the carriage as she was near fainting." There was a silence. Then,
"Tessa,"
Henry said in an odd voice, and she turned to see him, arrested in the act of applying an Arazzi to his inner arm. He was staring at the wall across from him. The wall Tessa had thought earlier was oddly mottled and splotched with stains. She saw now that they were no accidental mess. Letters a foot tall, each stretched across the wallpaper, written in what looked like dried black blood.
The infernal devices are without pity. The infernal devices are without regret. The infernal devices are without number. The infernal devices will never stop coming. And there, beneath the scrolls, a last sentence, barely readable, as if whoever had written it had been losing the use of his hands. She pictured Benedict locked in his room, going slowly mad as he transformed, smearing the words on the wall with his own ichor-ridden blood. May God have mercy on our souls. The worm lunged, and Will dived forward into a roll, narrowly missing its snapping jaws. He came up into a crouch, then to his feet, and raced along the length of the creature until he reached its thrashing tail. He whirled around and saw the demon looming like a cobra over Gideon and Gabriel, though, to his surprise, it seemed to have frozen, hissing but not attacking. Did it recognize its children? Feel anything for them? It was impossible to tell. Cecily was halfway up the yew tree, clinging to a branch. Hoping that she would see sense and stay there, Will spun toward Jem and held up a hand so his parabatai could see him. They had long ago worked out a series of gestures they used to communicate what they needed in the midst of battle, in case they could not hear each other's voices. Jem's eyes lit with understanding, and he tossed his cane toward Will. In a perfect throw, it sailed end over end, till Will caught it in one hand and clicked the handle. The blade shot out, and Will brought it down swift and hard, cleaving straight through the creature's thick skin. The worm jerked back and howled as Will struck again, parting its tail from its body. Benedict thrashed at both ends, and ichor gushed forth in a sticky blast, coating Will. He ducked away with a shout, his skin burning. Will! Jem darted towards him. Gideon and Gabriel were slashing at the worm's head, doing their best to keep its attention focused on them. As Will wiped burning ichor from his eyes with his free hand, Cecily dropped from the yew tree and landed squarely on the worm's back. Will dropped the sword cane in shock. He had never done that before, never dropped a weapon in the middle of a battle, but there was his little sister clinging with grim determination to the back of a massive demon worm, like a tiny flea clinging to the fur of a dog. As he stared in horror, Cecily yanked a dagger from her belt and drove it viciously into the demon's flesh.
What does she think she's doing? As if a tiny dagger could kill a thing that size.
Will! Will!
Jem was saying in his ear, his voice urgent, and Will realized he had spoken aloud. And, name of the angel, the worm's head was swinging around towards Cecily, its mouth open and vast and lined with teeth. Cecily let go of the dagger's handle and rolled sideways, off the body of the worm. Its jaws missed her by a hair's breadth and snapped viciously shut on its own body. Black ichor gushed and the worm jerked its head back, a howl like the wail of a banshee erupting from its throat. A massive wound gaped in its side, and gobbets of its own flesh hung from its jaws. As Will stared, Gabriel raised his bow and let an arrow fly. It sang home to its target and buried itself in one of the worm's lidless black eyes. The creature reared back, and then its head sagged forward and it crumpled in on itself, folding up, disappearing as demons did when the life left them. Gabriel's bow fell to the ground with a clatter that Will barely heard. The trampled ground was soaked with blood from the worm's savaged body. In the midst of it all, Ceci was rising slowly to her feet, wincing, her right wrist twisted at an odd angle. Will did not even feel himself begin to run toward her. He realized it only when he was brought up short by Jem's restraining hand. He turned on his parabatai wildly.
My sister!
Your face, replied Jem, with remarkable calm considering the situation. You're covered in demon blood, William, and it's burning you. I must give you an Uratzi before the damage cannot be undone.
Let me go,
Will insisted, and tried to pull away. But Jem's cool hand was cupping the back of his neck, and then there was a burn of a steely on his wrist, and the pain he had not even known he was feeling began to ebb. Jem let go of him with a small hiss of pain of his own. He had gotten some of the ichor on his fingers. Will paused, irresolute, but Jem waved him away, already applying his own steely to his hand.
It was only a moment's delay, but by the time Will reached his sister's side, Gabriel had gotten there first. Gabriel had his hand under her chin, his green eyes flicking over her face. She was looking up at him with astonishment when Will arrived and caught her by the shoulder. "Get away from my sister," he barked, and Gabriel stepped back, his mouth thinning into a hard line. Gideon was hard on his heels, and they swarmed around Cecily as Will held her fast with one hand, drawing his steely with the other. She looked at him with flashing blue eyes as he carved a black Eratzi against one side of her throat and a Mendelin on the other. Her black hair had escaped from its braid, and she looked like the wild girl he remembered, fierce and unafraid of anything.
"Are you hurt, Cariad?"
The word slipped out before he could stop it, a childhood endearment he'd almost forgotten.
"Cariad," she echoed,
her eyes flashing disbelief.
"I'm quite unhurt."
"Not quite," Will said, indicating her injured wrist and gashes on her face and hands, which had begun to close up as the Eratzi did its work. Anger swelled up inside him so much that he did not hear Jem, behind him, begin to cough. Usually a sound that would have lit him into action, like a spark thrown into dry tinder.
"Cecily, what could you possibly have been?"
"That was one of the bravest things I've seen a shadow hunter do," interrupted Gabriel. He was not looking at Will, but at Cecily, with a mixture of surprise and something else in his expression. There was mud and blood in his hair, as there was on all of them, but his green eyes were very bright. Cecily flushed.
"I was only..."
She broke off, her eyes widening as she looked past Will. Jem coughed again, and this time Will heard it. He turned just in time to see his parabatai slumped to his knees on the ground.